This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. For more than 100 years, Thomas Edison put the first kiss on film at his Black Maria studio. The entire reel was less than 30 seconds long, but the reaction was immense. Footage was denounced as scandalous and disgusting. This controversial kiss inspired a new interactive multimedia project in Raleigh called Public Displays. It explores the intimacy of the kiss and gives members of the public the right to have their own kiss filmed in the same style as Edison's. And then the images are projected alongside that of the 1896 kiss. The installation asks participants to examine their own perceptions of public displays of affection. Joining me now are three of the project's collaborators. Marcia Gordon is North Carolina State University film professor and co-star of Movies on the Radio. Welcome back, Marcia. Good to have you. Josephine McRobbie is a librarian at North Carolina State University. Welcome, Josephine. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
And with me also is architect and visual artist Louis Cherry, who is the co-star of Your Own Home as well, Marcia Gordon's husband. Welcome, Louis. Good to have you.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So, Marcia, before we get into the kiss and the exhibit, which I'm very interested in, let's get back to this film.
Yeah. Okay, so 1896, Thomas Edison Company in New Jersey invites these two actors, May Irwin and John Rice, to perform a kiss in front of his big 500-pound camera at the time in his studio, the Black Maria studio. And they were performing in a play at the time, and so they basically performed this climax. It's 19 seconds.
No pun intended.
Yeah, the kiss lasts about 3 seconds, actually, at the end. So they do this little talking to each other, and then they have this climactic kiss at the end. And so this is a film that I always teach in my film history classes. It's one of the first few years of filmmaking, and this is the kind of thing that people would have watched at the time.
So it's the birth of the porn industry as well.
Oh, Frank, no sensationalizing.
Come on, it was at the time, practically. People got upset, didn't
but
they?
There were some people who did, in fact, get upset. There's always somebody who's going to get upset about something. But in fact, the catalog description, which we have on our website, publicdisplays.org, is very sensationalizing. It's like they kiss and kiss and kiss, and the house comes down every time. And in fact, when you watch it today, you go, wow, that's really hyperbolic, even thinking about 1890s morality.
It is interesting to think about the difference it would have had and the impact it might have had on an audience that goes to see a play and may well know that this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And then seeing it on this new medium film.
Yeah. And actually, at the time that it's produced is this transitional time between watching films literally in a peep show viewer like box and having them projected. This film comes out the year there's this kind of transition in the United States between the two. And so there's also the kind of peep show aspect of looking in versus seeing it projected in a darkened room.
So, Louis, let's talk about this now, the 2016 rendition of this. This project tries to recreate the visuals of that first on-screen kiss. How?
Well, the format is that we have a booth set up and a video camera, and people come in, register, and sit for the 19 seconds. And they have one take, 19 seconds. You can do whatever you want. Just we would like there to be a kiss involved. And then that video file is fed into a pool of files that is then projected into the gallery. And so there's a 12 images that are arrayed on a wall, and each so a person can see their video within just a few minutes of having participated.
There's also, as I understand, a little black box for one person to view the live stream of what's happening in the booth. Why did you build that?
Well, that's a nod to the kinetoscope format, and it also creates that sort of voyeuristic component that's the only way that you can see inside the booth. The booth is private, and so it's just sort of playing with that public-private.
You know, a lot of this thing is really thinking about the line between privacy and the public in the contemporary age, in the age of oversharing on Facebook and all the other things. I don't even know what the kids are doing today. But but it's really different when you sit down to perform something in front of a camera that's going to end up on the wall of a gallery within a few minutes versus the way you control your own image or try to control at least through these other means.
Yeah. And it's also sort of amazing to me how retro our current modern technology is. I mean, the fact is we're now looking at videos on much smaller screens, right? And
yeah.
And we're still sort of appalled at some of the things we see on the screen now and then.
Well, and also limited duration. I mean, Vine videos right. and Instagram videos, you know, the first films that were made for the kinetoscope viewer kind of maxed out around 20 or so seconds because of the amount of film that could fit right. in the box. And so the fact that our attention spans now are that truncated, I think, right. is also a very telling and circularity.
Back to Snapchat. Josephine, you were one of the three librarians who worked on this project. First of all, what sparked your interest in this?
Sure. So I've done some film, sort of archival film remix projects in the past, and so I was interested in the content. I'm a subject specialist for film at State. And my colleague, Jason Evans Groth, and my colleague Trevor Thornton had worked with Marcia previously on projects that looked at how we use these primary sources in new ways using technology. And that's what is really interesting to us is how do we take these things that are preserved because of libraries and archives. You know, the Edison films are preserved at the Library of Congress, among other places. And how do we do new and interesting things with them and make them relevant to today's audiences?
So we can understand the archival part of it for a librarian, but then there's something sort of very anti-library about the software, which is the way it randomly selects and projects. Because we don't think of random and library in the kind of in the same sentence.
Sure. Well, it all has metadata. It does.
There you go.
So the images are coming up. The films are coming up. In a kind of serendipitous way, and we thought that was really interesting too. So, and they come up without names attached to them. So you're seeing images in the gallery who are strangers kissing in this very intimate way, and it's very, very alluring and mysterious in that way, too.
And keep in mind, too, that that's one wall of the gallery. The other wall of the gallery constantly loops that original Edison film alongside a similarly scaled new kiss. So there is also an opportunity to see something on a larger scale right beside the original.
How does the layout of the exhibit itself, Lewis, contribute to the overall impact for somebody who comes and sees this?
Well, you know, that's part of what it is. It's a gallery installation. So it's the content within the gallery, but it's also the artifacts that we created and sort of the spatial experience. So the photo booth itself is all black, and it's kind of designed as a contemporary interpretation of Edison's Black Mariah studio. And then the kinetoscope is a very abstracted sort of modernist version of a kinetoscope. So spatially, it's just sort of the booth and the kind of check-in area and then the gallery. But it's designed to be an aesthetic experience as well as, you know, the content that we talk about.
And a couple of the decisions we made, when people come, you don't have to make an appointment or reservation or anything. People can just come. You know, we're doing it again on Sunday from 5 to 9 at Flanders Gallery, which shares the Lump space on Blount Street in downtown Raleigh. People can come in and they're in the kind of the front of house, and then there's a temporary moving wall in the gallery, and they go on the other side of that, and that's where you can see everything happening in the gallery. And so there's also this experience of watching all these images with a group of people, some but not all of whom are going to be up on the wall. And so what was astonishing, the little time I got to spend outside of the booth when we did this on First Friday, was listening to people talk to each other. You know, oh, wow, look at that. I see that. And, you know, there's so many different configurations of people that have come through the gallery. We've had couples. We've had mothers bring their children. We've had families. We've had friends. We've had strangers.
And no two kisses are alike, it turns out.
No two kisses are alike. And that's the whole idea, was to create an open space where people could come in and display their affection in whatever way they felt comfortable with. So it's really amazing to see 25-year-olds and then 80-year-olds and then intergenerational, and we've had a couple people bring their dogs
and a mannequin
and some solo performances as well, which, you know, when you add them all up, it really shows you a spectrum of the way people think about affection.
When you talk now about a solo performance, would that be?
We've had a couple different solo performances. One woman just performed to the camera, which until we saw it on the wall, we were like, well, that'll be interesting. It was amazing because, in fact, when you're kissing making a gesture towards the camera.
She was blowing kisses.
It was like to the audience. And we had another woman come and bring a picture of her late husband and talk to the camera and use that picture for her her display of affection. So there's no, I mean, we don't define what people do in the context of when they come into the booth. We want people to express what they feel like they need and want to express about this gesture.
One can imagine this exploration of intimacy and all of the things that you just described without the Edison film. What's the value of having that reference point, do you think?
Well, I think one value is it gives us, I mean, this kind of framing structure that here's something 120 years ago. I mean, screen kisses, I mean, if you think about the history of kissing on screen, it is really, really important because it tells us a lot about the times we are living in and how we are representing ourselves to ourselves, right? So if you think about interracial kisses or homosexual kisses on screen in something like Brokeback Mountain, right. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? I mean, these are places where we can see our culture evolving and thinking through things and working out things. So I think to place something contemporary in that historical context is really worthwhile.
I think it reminds us, too, of how, you know, we think we've come so far, and yet we're reminded that a gay couple kissing in public is still something that people can have an issue with, and that this sort of time marker, I think, sort of points out where we are today.
And I think it also helped us define the aesthetics of the exhibition because we chose, for example, to do all of our filming and projection in black and white, which is another aesthetic link to that original. And it is so beautiful to see this wall of black and white images at all of these different, you know, timings, because it's not that everything is synchronized on that 19 seconds on that multiple wall. And it is just a beautiful thing to look at as an object on the gallery wall.
Josephine, again, from a librarian's point of view, what is the value, or is there any value in archiving these?
Yes, so we do plan to do that. And we send copies to every participant so they have a copy of their kiss. But I think adding to this historical record is really important, and to have these contemporary interpretations that are so completely varied is really, really wonderful.
Is it? Would you archive, save a thing like this with the reference? In other words, it's saved as a collection? Or, I mean, is there anything about the kisses themselves? I mean, you sort of, as a librarian, you're always imagining what use can this have 100 years from now that I can't imagine now. One might be the anthropology of kissing. But on the other hand, to see it in reference to the 1896, I wonder how it's going to be stored and saved.
Sure. Yeah. So we have master files that we'll have stored in multiple places for redundancy. And I would also like to have some descriptions of the kisses that explain what kind of kiss it is, maybe the perceived genders of the people in the pictures, those sorts of things. So they could be used in the future in that way, too.
And our plan is that once we're done with this Raleigh show, which will be, again, this Sunday is the last night people can participate, we will put some kind of lower resolution streaming version of this online for people to have access to, in addition to the gallery having this for sale. Kelly McChesney, who runs Flanders Gallery, has been really amazing about opening her space to us and letting us do something that's a little bit unconventional in a gallery space in terms of participant media, which is, I think, a really important concept to talk about, because I think people feel very empowered by being able to be part of something. And it's not every day that you can do that in the context of an art gallery.
We are talking about the Raleigh Art Installation Public Displays today on The State of Things. Marcia, what kind of reactions and responses have you gotten so far?
Well, so one of the things that we've started doing is, as we're sending out video files to people, because we wanted people to have, of course, a memento of their experience, we're also asking them to take a short survey, which can be anonymously submitted. And the responses so far have been so interesting. Some people have said, why isn't there more community participation in art? Why is it always about going and just looking at something on the wall that somebody else made? And I think that may be partly symptomatic of the age that we live in and the desire to be part of something like this. Other people have said, one of the more interesting comments is that when you see people being affectionate with each other in public, your instinct is to turn away and not look at it. And this show is asking us to look at it.
And these aren't actors. I mean,
these aren't
actors. Thomas Edison's first couple were, in fact, actors, so that we all understood it was a performance. In this case, it's not. This is something intimate. And it's also dynamic. It's happening because of the random display and the fact that people are coming and going from the booth. Can you imagine this, Lewis, I'll ask you, as an exhibit, something that would be a static exhibit and arranged and curated in a way that sort of has a message, an artistic effect?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a soundtrack that goes with the exhibit, which is all songs that have some reference to kissing, and it's actually a pretty amazing soundtrack. And the visual quality is actually stunning. And so, yeah, I think absolutely it has a.
And
a
in fact, we have done it so that that this can be projected in the context of any museum or gallery that has projection capabilities. We have the files, you know, put together in a fashion that this can be replicated even without the people present. Although I have to say, having the people present, which of course you would do anytime an audience was there, but having the people present who were participating, that's where part of the magic comes, is from that energy of experiencing things. But I wanted to say one quick thing, Frank, with regard to that question of the acting, which is anytime you have a camera turned on people and they know you're filming them, they are acting. Right. And so one of the things for me that's really interesting to think about, I think a lot about documentary and nonfiction representations, is that, yes, there is a degree of performance happening every single time people sit down. And some people are like fun and theatrical, right? Like, you know, we'll do something with a hat or a gesture or something dramatic. But also that the real kind of intimacy or affection kind of punctures that at some point during these exchanges.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Marcia Gordon, North Carolina State University film professor, Josephine McRobbie, a librarian at North Carolina State, and Lewis Cherry, an architect and visual artist. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
The public displays exhibit takes place in Raleigh at Flanders Gallery on Sunday. It's Valentine's Day from 5 to 9. More details at our website, stateofthings.org. You can also find a few of those kisses at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, Charlie Shelton, Ormond, and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley is our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.